will be talking about RuneScape's Botany Bay at some point. We're going to talk about an RS3 thing that I've never been to, and it's no longer in the game.
Amazing. I love that.
Because I read about it, and I was like, fucking, what? Why? Who thought this was good? Who did this? It was in the game for like 6 years. I was like, holy shit, all right.
Hello, and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
And I'm Logan.
And today we are changing things up a bit, I guess. We have been talking in the behind the scenes about how we do the show and what's going on, and we have decided that what we're going to do is a little something, pun intended, called the Codex Mini. And we're kind of going into this every other week cadence where we'll have a big episode, kind of like what you would expect from our previous stuff, and then we'll kind of have a smaller episode the following week. Kind of realized after doing 20-odd episodes that we've just been turning down some topics because they couldn't fill out a full hour-long episode. So we came up with the idea of a mini, because it's the same codex you know and love, but small, fun-sized. And what better month to do it than in the candy month itself?
I'm sure it's a coincidence that you just started getting into 40K, and now you're talking about minis.
We're not going to talk about that. I literally had to close tabs for Skitarii Rangers like an hour ago.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have called you out like that. On mic here, now they know.
Streaming you Space Marine talking about Chaos and Warp and Thousand Suns like I know what I'm talking about all of a sudden.
Those will not be mini episodes. Those will be.
It's also called Codex. Codex Astartes. I mean, Codex Miniatures. I mean, we're doing Codex Minis. That's what we're doing.
It is.
It's the same thing, but it's small. usually, and you'll, I guess you'll figure this out, but today's mini it's a continuation of rune crafting, correct?
Yeah, we're going to do a little addendum where we talk about some of the mechanics and some of the weird social interplay that happens because of that.
Before we do that, though, you know what's coming. I know what's coming.
I do.
What's your bright spot?
This one feels a little bit like cheating, but we haven't brought it up in a while, and I think I should. My bright spot is actually going to be Knowledge Fight, the podcast from which we stole this segment.
Stole the bright spot.
Yeah. I have realized, I almost sent this to you in a text message, but I wanted to save it, that Knowledge Fight is the old school RuneScape of podcasts. I cycle in and out of it for months at a time. I dive way too deep into it. I can't in good conscience recommend that anyone else interact with it in any way.
Uh-huh. And there's years of built up lore.
So much. So much. I've forgotten more lore from that show than I remember, similar to RuneScape. But yeah, I've been catching back up. I've worked through, I don't know, 5 months worth of pods in the last week or so.
My God, that's a lot of Knowledge Fight.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell the kind people what Knowledge Fight is?
Knowledge Fight is this is a thing that comes up in the subreddit often, which is just like, how do you explain this to a person and not sound insane? And there's not a great way, I don't think. Knowledge Fight are two former comedians who cover and debunk Alex Jones and InfoWars and their adjacent terrible people in that orbit. It is pretty academic, I feel like, for what it is.
Yeah, I think the thing that really stood out to me about the show is that it is not them necessarily lampooning Alex Jones for being a just crazy person beyond all belief. It is very much here is a crazy thing that he says. Let me explain to you the context of that thing and the like philosophical principle about like behind the argument that he is making and like how that is flawed and wrong and what he is trying to do by saying this thing.
Yeah. And that dude talks a lot of shit. So you get all kinds of crazy topics. You learn about all kinds of random things across all of space and time, honestly, because that guy's on air forever. So, yeah, it is good. I don't know, like, a byproduct of listening to it means you have to hear Alex Jones, which I don't think anyone should do.
No.
So that's why it's tough to, like, recommend people listen to it. But it is excellent.
It is a tough recommendation. I will say that if you can listen to it, and this is the frame of mind I go into the show, and I know that you are incapable of this, but I go into it as these two funny comedian people have listened to the craziest thing you could possibly think of, and they debunk it slowly. And so long as you take that little part of your brain that knows that there are people who watch that show seriously and believe the things that Alex Jones is saying, if you take that little part and you just set it aside, you get to hear the wildest thing that you could possibly imagine every 5 minutes, and then you can have a fun, enjoyable rest of your day. Just separate that part where there are people who actually believe these things, and you'll have a good time. If you can't do that, don't listen to the show.
I come at it from the opposite end, where I need to understand how people came to believe those things for the world to make sense to me again, which I think is maybe a place some people can recognize being in as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Check out Knowledge Fight. Listen to the first. You know what? my like pseudo bright spot is listen to the Knowledge Fight theme song. And then if that doesn't hook you, then you can get out. And if you don't like the first 10 minutes, get out and leave it behind and never touch it again.
Yeah, it is the best theme song for a podcast.
It's certainly the best theme song featuring Alex Jones.
Yeah. Made by DJ Dan Arkey. Shout out to him. Does excellent work.
Dan Arkey. Incredible.
Yeah, it was a random listener who now, like, when Catherine and I went and saw Knowledge Fight live in Milwaukee a couple years ago now, DJ Dan Arkey was there as well. He was able to sync up with that part of the tour, and we got a live set from the individual who made the theme song. So that was really neat.
Hell yeah. Good stuff.
And yours?
Ooh, I don't think I've shared this on the show before. I don't know if I even told you this. My bright spot for this episode is a minor preamble. So my son is 2.5 years old now, a little bit older, and he's a little bit speech delayed. So he's still not like speaking in full sentences and stuff. We're like going to speech therapy, and he's picking up words a little bit quicker now, but still pretty slow. And one of the things that the speech therapist told us is, hey, the best you can do is kind of get him to be more comfortable making sounds, like getting more sounds and kind of stacking them together. And, you know, those are the building blocks of language.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So
we get the instrument working.
Exactly. So we started with, so the real basic, he was doing dada and mama for a while. And then one of the ways that the speech therapist was like, hey, here's another way to add in sounds, is transitioning from dada to daddy, which I don't love, but it's fine.
Just conceptually. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not my favorite.
That's a charged term in the year of our Lord 2024.
Yeah. So I took the hit for the boy to learn language. But my bright spot is, because of this idea of stacking things together, we have now just started to stack sounds together. And as we talked about, I guess in a future episode, he has learned new sounds and he's starting to make new sounds. And he has decided that, at least for this week, he is going to call me Daddy-O. And it is hilarious.
That's pretty rad.
Yep.
Man. I'm going to need to resist the urge to incorporate that occasionally now.
Yep. It took a while for me to warm up to it, but it is very funny that when I come downstairs from recording this podcast, he will run over to the stairs and he will say Daddy-O in a very loud, excited way. And it has brightened my day.
And we get him a small zoot suit.
Oh, if only. Like Halloween is coming.
That's true.
Get him a cane. How did
we make it to Daddy-O? Did you?
I don't know. I did not see Daddy-O.
So that was not intentional. Okay, no. That was my question. Yeah.
Nope.
Because there's not a lot of letters you can append to the tail end of dad to make.
To make Daddy-O happen.
Recognizable. Yeah. Like,
yep. Yeah. I can only imagine that either my wife did it and it was like a one-off thing and he's 2.5, so now that's his whole world, or just like weird portmanteau of like E-I-E-I-O, and then it just kind of mm-hmm. went from there. But I honestly have no idea.
I mean, I would assume the first time or two elicited a reaction.
Oh, yeah. So it was certainly encouraged once it happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, where it came from, I have no idea.
Oh, that is excellent.
Yeah.
Everything I have for you today is going to be less fun than that.
Oh, that's fine.
We're talking about runecrafting some more.
Perfect.
So, last time we talked about runecrafting, we covered most to all of the initial lore, if I remember correctly, of kind of how that got started in Gilinor and eventually how those secrets were disseminated down through humans.
Yes. Yeah. The whole crusade of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And we focused like almost entirely in-game lore. Today we're going to cover some of the mechanics a little bit, in how a player goes about training the skill of runecraft and some of the weirdness that comes out of that. Let's see. So we talked about rune essence. I think a bit. Mm-hmm. So it's a thing. You mine it. It has no charge to it. And then you take that rune essence to an altar. You imbue it with energy at that altar. And then that makes a rune. So that's kind of your standard method. You have to go to a place in the world where the portal to the altar is. And then you end up at the rune crafting altar. You turn your essence into runes. You go to a bank. You do it again. Pretty straightforward. What we didn't cover last time, I know we didn't talk about the abyss. I'm pretty sure, at least.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And I don't think we talked about ZMI and Orania.
No.
Altars.
We okay. have not talked about those. Those don't even sound like James Cameron movies to me.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I don't think anyone. Yeah, there's no weird monsters in either of those. Let's see. Let's start with. Yeah, let's just see where this goes. So the abyss is going to be a topic for a show at some point, I feel like. There's a lot of weirdness around the current lore of the abyss. There is some reason to believe that every time an individual teleports, that they briefly enter the abyss during that process. There is also reason to believe that the abyss is not necessarily a place in between planes, but is in fact the inside of a god.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. It is weird. We are going to talk about it as though it is a plane of existence.
Okay.
Because in the spoken lore, for sure that's what it is. Some of the other things I'm drawing from other sources like RS3 or Q&A's with devs during like live streams where they're talking about upcoming content, some things that aren't necessarily like hard canon. So like we said, normally to like, let's say we're gonna go to the nature altar to craft nature runes because we want to cast high alchemy 10,000 times on all of these blue dragon hide bodies that we crafted together. Normally you would go to a bank. The nature altar is quite far away from a bank. It's kind of a pain. It's one of the slower ones to get to. There's not a bank nearby. it sucks. Option two is we utilize the Abyss. To get to the Abyss, we have to go talk to our friends, the Zamorakian Wizards. They have come up. I'm pretty sure we touched on them in RuneCrafting a bit. We talked about the Wizard's Tower, I believe.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. And they're the ones who may or may not have burned down the Wizard's Tower.
Exactly. And also the ones who got, like, uber murdered in Varrock as a result of the Wizard's Tower being burned and the subsequent vigilante violence that took place.
Yep.
So that was in the past. In the present, as a player, you can find a Zamorakian still hanging out in Varrock. And he will give you a little mini quest, which is good for our mini episode. Mini quest is enter the Abyss. He gives you a location orb and he asks you to go around Gilinor and find different ways to teleport to the Rune Essence Mine. So this magic orb can kind of triangulate what's going on in these dimensional shifts.
Okay.
Does that follow a
little
bit?
Suspect, but I think I track what's going on.
So you just do it. You just do that. There's not really any, there aren't like branching narratives in this where you decide not to help the guy out and the quest continues. You either help the guy out or you never get to go to the Abyss.
I mean, it's an MMO.
Help the guy out. Yeah. The Abyss is real. It's real gross. I'm going to send you a screenshot here instead of going there because it's also a violent place. And I don't want to deal with that while we're trying to record this episode. So it is red and dark and vaguely organic in appearance. And there's weird, gross beasties all over the place.
Is this a series of heads that have red radish sprouts, kind of, and tongue sticking out? And they're just heads on shoulders and the hands are their feet? Is that what I'm looking at here?
I think those are the Abyssal Walkers, I want to say.
That makes sense. That's
bottom right center is an Abyssal Leech.
Gross.
And that thing with the pyramid head in the middle is something else.
Oh, that's not a player character with a cool hat.
I think that might be a Guardian. That's an Abyssal Guardian. And they are ooky looking as well. Here's just a good shot of one of those fellas. Yeah. Kinda nightmare inducing in a couple ways.
Yeah, it's like if you enter your mind's eye, if you are a Zelda player, it looks like one of the Yiga clan ninjas, but instead of a quirky face, it is a pyramid head that looks like it has a smiley face on it. And I don't know if that's intentional or not.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's
cool.
Unsettling. It's a vibe for sure.
Yeah. This I know that you put me on blast earlier for my 40K dalliance, but everything that you have said about the Abyss is really giving it's really giving warp energy to me.
Yes. That is actually a pretty good parallel here.
Okay.
To get to the Abyss, you have to go talk to a different Zamorakian wizard who is in the wilderness. He's in low level wilderness. I think it's like 10 or 11. So you're probably not going to get into too much trouble on the way there.
Okay. And that's the PvP area.
Correct. Yep. So you got to go north of Varrock and there's a ditch that's like 4 feet deep dug in the ground that separates civilized space from the wilderness. And you jump over that. You run out there, hope no one murders you, talk to the Zamorakian wizard, and he teleports you, just like Aubrey would, the runecrafting shop owner. That guy teleports you to the Essence Mine. This guy teleports you to the Abyss. And here is the map of the Abyss. You will see it is kind of like two concentric rings.
Oh, yeah.
You end up on the outer ring. You'll notice there is no path from the outer ring to the inner ring.
Yes.
The way you traverse that is at various points through the outer ring. In fact, that first screenshot I sent you, like top center right, there's kind of a hole in the wall with some little tentacle-looking things, stalactites coming out of the ground there, yep. blocking it.
Yep.
So at various places in the outer ring, there is a path to the inner ring that is blocked by some kind of a gross thing.
Cool.
The one you see in that picture there are tendrils. You need a wood-cutting axe to chop down those tendrils, and then you can get your way through. Some of them just have rocks blocking the way. You need a pickaxe with you to mine the rocks. There are eyes that follow you as you move about, and you have to use your thieving skill to get past those. There is a narrow gap, which you use agility to squeeze your way through. It's a little claustrophobic looking. And then the last one is a boil, just like a putrid, gross, nonsense thing that you have to bring a tinderbox with you to set ablaze.
Great.
In order to get through.
Yuck. And
once you pass one of those obstacles, you end up in that inner ring.
Okay.
So the strategy, typically, from like a just an in-game player sense, you bring weight-reducing armor. You want your weight as low as possible because you're going to be doing a lot of running, and that slows your run energy drain down when your weight is low.
Okay.
And then the easiest ones to get past are usually you go with the rocks. You don't want to bring an axe and a pickaxe and a tinderbox with you because you're going to fill up your inventory with a bunch of useless tools instead of rune essence. So usually you'll just bring a pickaxe and try to pass either the agility one, the thieving one, or the pickaxe. And specifically, you bring a black pickaxe because that has a very low weight. It's not a good pickaxe, but it weighs very, very little, which is more important in this case. So you mine the rock away with your black pickaxe. You make it to the inner ring. The inner ring, I'll drop you another map here, is this. Unfortunately, I could not find a very high-res image of this one. It is going. So the inner ring allows us to actually navigate to all of the other, well, most of the other runecrafting altars without having to physically run there first. So there are...
What does that mean?
There are 14 portals on that inner ring.
Okay.
I don't think this has actually sent, has it? Or did it? Did it
come through? I haven't.
Okay. So those little circles, those are the rune symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So at like 12, 1 o'clock, you have chaos, law, death, water, as you go around clockwise, all the way to nature at like 11:30, 11:45.
Okay.
And then we have one yellow dot in the middle there, and that's actually an NPC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Someone just smack dab in the middle of the abyss.
There's someone smack dab in the middle of the abyss. It is a dark wizard, and he is there doing Zamorak work, keeping the abyss open. He is also the individual who will repair your rune crafting pouches, which I don't think we've mentioned.
No, we have not.
Runecrafting pouches, you can get them as drops from those gross abyssal monsters outside after you complete the mini quest. And they allow you to store multiple essence inside of the pouch. So you basically turn one inventory slot into multiple.
Several. Okay.
Yep. And that means you can craft more runes before you have to bank. So you're going to be able to bring more than just your standard, like 26 or so essence with you.
Okay, so do you basically load up your inventory with your black pickaxe and whatever small tools you need, and then the rest is just those pouches?
Yep. Yeah, so you can have a small pouch, medium, large, giant, and then after a lot of work in a minigame, you can combine all four of those into the colossal pouch, assuming you have 85 rune crafting.
Okay.
And those do dramatically speed up your XP per hour. The small pouch only gets you an extra 3 capacity. It's not really worth using. But if you look at the colossal pouch, that thing holds 40 rune essence.
Right.
So if before you were bringing 26, you now bring 25 plus the colossal pouch, which holds another 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're bringing 65 per trip instead of 26 per trip.
Okay. Yeah,
so that, pretty big difference.
Yeah, that's huge. Colossal, one would say.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those pouches break down as you use them. And that fellow there in the middle is the mage who repairs them for you.
Gotcha. Okay.
Running here to have him do that sucks. If you have unlocked the Lunar spellbook, there is a spell called NPC Contact that you can use to talk to the man remotely, and he can fix them at a distance for you.
He just fixes your pouch over the phone?
Yes. Yes. Nice. He does RuneCraft tech support over the phone.
Love that.
Restores your pouches so you can keep going. So the idea here is, instead of running to whatever faraway altar you would in Gilinor, you run through the wilderness, get teleported by the mage, dodge the creepy eyes in the outer ring, make it to the inner ring, and then enter one of these interdimensional doors that will take you directly to the altar where you can craft your runes.
Okay.
So I mean, that makes sense. Will be a shorter trip.
Yeah.
Although far more dangerous, because you have to dodge dangerous NPCs and potentially other players as well. So for some things, it makes sense to take this route. For others, it doesn't. I'm not even sure, actually. I don't know if anyone does too much abyssal rune crafting now that the minigame is out, which we're going to end up covering the minigame in a different episode, since this is supposed to be a mini. Non-standard method number one is going through the abyss, working with our Zamorakian friends there. Mm-hmm. Non-standard method two is the ZMI altar, the Irania altar that we mentioned earlier. This was also founded by the Zamorakians after they got pushed out of the Wizard's Tower. So ZMI stands for Zamorak Magical Institute.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they found a very strange altar in a very strange place underground, the Orania altar. I don't have a lot of information on like what this thing does from like a lore magic standpoint.
All right.
But from an in-game perspective, it crafts randomized runes for you. So instead of going to the nature rune and turning all of your runes into nature runes, you go to the Irania altar with all of your essence, you craft it, and it does a bunch of dice rolls to
just spits out runes.
Yeah. Here is an idea for you on the math there. So it's based off of your level. I think we talked about something like this with Fish at some point for some other mini game, but as your rune crafting level goes up, you're more likely to get higher level runes out of that altar.
All right.
So if you're really low level, you're going to get air runes, you're going to get minor runes. Your XP per hour is not going to be great. As you go up, you're going to get the more expensive higher level runes. The reason you would do this, though, is every rune you craft through this altar gives you 1.7 times the normal amount of XP.
Okay. So if you're if you're trying to level rune crafting, you would go here instead of trying to gather as many nature runes as you can.
Mostly yes.
Okay.
With one exception, which is going to be the weird thing we'll talk about in just a second. Yeah, typically if you want nature runes, you go and you craft nature runes, you're probably not getting the best XP per hour you could by doing that. But nature runes are useful. And maybe the best XP per hour rune you have access to isn't functionally very good for you.
Yeah.
Here, you don't get to pick what comes out of the box, but you are going to get more XP out of it.
Yeah. But the XP values for each of the runes remains the same. You just get a multiplier on top of it?
Correct.
Okay.
One of the achievement diaries also gives you a chance to get double the amount of runes whenever it rolls the randomizer, but they don't grant you any additional XP.
Hmm.
Here's kind of the graphical version of that table as well.
Ooh, that's pretty. That's,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's nice.
The RuneCraft, the wiki always has good charts. So the altar here is a little bit different. You just run from a bank to the altar like you normally would. But it's in this cave underground, and you have two pathways. There's a very long, winding pathway with no monsters, and there's a very short path, much shorter pathway with all kinds of stuff that's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
So what happens is there are a couple of worlds where people typically do this. You go to a server specifically hoping other people are going to be here, and you just run masses and hope you don't get tagged, basically.
Amazing.
So if you go here in game, you'll see the bank icon towards the north there, and the altar is down in the southeast corner, and you just kind of run this L shape.
Yep.
It will just be a stream of players running this L, and monsters doing attacks, and mages shooting magic. And if you go by yourself, you're going to soak a lot of damage, especially if you're a lower level player. But the idea is you just group with enough people, and it's single way combat, and you just hope you don't get tagged too bad.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just run the gauntlet between the bank and the altar every time. Players.
Yep. So this gets us to why we want to talk about this, which is Essence Runners. This is an option at standard runecrafting altars, and it used to be an option at CMI until people figured out what to do here. And then that had to get banned because the XP rates were far higher than anticipated. And this is how I used to make money for a while. Runecrafting, the XP per hour is garbage. The click intensity is high. You have to be paying attention almost all of the time with most of these methods. And you're going to get like 35k, 40k an hour, which is trash when you need, you know, let's say 400,000 XP to gain a level. That's where I'm at now.
Yikes.
Yeah. So 40k an hour sucks. And focused, like you're not doing the dishes and making lava runes. You are dialed in doing a thing that kind of blows. So people figured out, hey, what if I just stand at the altar and I pay some schmuck to bring me the rune essence?
Uh-huh.
And then I'll give that schmuck rune essence back in noted form and either some free runes or some gold for their effort.
Yeah.
And this is how I made money as a child. I was running law runes. The guy's still in my friends list, I think.
Amazing.
So this was before the GE existed. So law runes were hard to come by, and that's what's used for teleportation. So there's a very direct link between using law runes and saving boatloads of time.
Yep.
So they were very valuable. Close to 1,000 each at the time, if my memory is correct. And they're down to, I don't know, like 150 or something now. So what I would do is I would fill up my inventory with essence and run to the law altar, which is on a special island where you can't take any weapons. It's like, I don't know, like a 3-minute run or something. It's terrible. And then that guy would just stand outside the altar. You would trade that person all of the rune essence you brought. Let's say you brought, I think it was like 26, we'll say. So you would give him 26 rune essence, and then he would give you 26 noted rune essence back, plus 26 law runes. Because that guy is going in there and crafting law runes and getting 2 law runes for each essence that he gets that he brings in.
Okay, so he splits it. So they're
keeping half a law rune. Yep, exactly. You get half, they get half. So you make a little bit money, and they end up getting substantially higher XP rates.
So are you the only person running essence to this guy, or are you one in a line?
So when we were children, the way this would work is someone would make a post on the RuneScape forums that would just say, hey, I'm looking for essence runners. I will be at this altar between time X and time Y.
Mm-hmm.
And people would just show up.
Okay.
Now it is as with all things, has been optimized to death.
Yeah, there's a website, so, there's a priority list.
Yeah, this is another way you can make a ton of money in this game, is being an essence runner. It's actually like incredibly productive now, and it used to be not a great way to make money, but it had no requirements. And now, if you are like a professional essence runner, you are expected to be like close to tick perfect with your traveling and your trades, because there's a lot of screens that happen in the trade that are there to prevent scams, but they take a couple seconds to click through. So you're supposed to be very good at those. You need to have the colossal pouch. You have to be at least 85 rune crafting, and you are dialed in the whole time while the other person just stands there and cycles through. Usually you can run up to three runners, I'm pretty sure, is the max.
Just like how the time works out.
Yeah, any more than three, and someone's going to be standing there waiting. When I was doing it, we would just, like, what would happen is you would find the person who you knew was doing the thing, and you would just spam trade them, but so was everyone else. So you had to just, they're just clicking in the chat box on a purple icon, and whoever they clicked on is who's getting that trade. So this is the way that the players have figured out to make runecrafting suck less is to enlist other players as employees, essentially.
My God.
And as an essence runner, you get no XP for this. You're doing all of the work of runecrafting and getting none of the XP of runecraft, and simply getting some gold.
Yeah, a little bit of gold here and there.
Yeah.
If you are selected.
Yeah, if the claw chooses, then then you get some gold. This was an option in the ZMI altar, but people were getting absolutely absurd rates in there. So now, anytime you are in that underground cave, you cannot complete a trade.
Oh,
the game just says no.
Okay. Yeah, because of all of the, like, once you start having three runners there, and you are nonstop turning those. That essence into runes, and you're getting 1.75. Yeah, you're going real fast.
Yep. You're cooking with gas there in runecrafting terms, at least.
Wow.
So yeah, there's your quick and dirty breakdown of the nonsense that is runecrafting and the weird player interactions. Maybe we'll slowly cover all of those, like, employable things you can do as a player.
Yeah, I like that. It's kind of like digging back at all of the jobs that you never put on your grown-up resume, and just, you know, we all had that one job where it just doesn't go on the resume. We don't talk about how I worked at Target for less than 2 months, you know?
No.
It just doesn't make it on there.
There weren't skills built there. Yeah.
No. That was just a childhood job. That was just, you know, for one summer. Stand. Yeah, exactly. For one summer, I ran Rune Essence from this bank to this altar, and a kindly man clicked on my name and gave me some law runes. And, you know, that's in the past now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
And I look back upon it fondly.
Yeah.
Like, I was not capable of walking across the White Wolf Mountains every time I needed to go visit the gnomes. So I needed those law runes so I could teleport to Camelot and walk half the distance, because I knew where that was, at least.
Yeah, you know, we all got something out of it. Just maybe one person got slightly more out of it than it appeared at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had no idea what that deal was doing as a youth. I just knew I didn't like trying to figure out how to get over that mountain. And sometimes I didn't remember how to get from, I don't know, Falador to the Alcarid. So you gotta have those runes for teleport.
Just gotta teleport. Wow. That's amazing. I continue to be baffled by all of the little tiny side jobs that people end up doing in this game that you would never think of that. Like, of course, that is an optimization problem that has been solved, but
yeah, and it's solved out of game in a way.
Yeah,
which is the fun part.
Yeah, like it's very much the, like, pre, when we were talking about the Grand Exchange, like the pre Grand Exchange farmer's market almost, where there's just maps of this is where you buy these things, and party hats are out of the city limits, you weirdos.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that was the job I had before running Runescence, was mining Runescence and selling it myself in the farmer's market by just typing over and over and over again, selling 1K Runescence, 40 GP each.
Amazing.
That's the only reason I can half competently type to this day, is because you had to be able to if you wanted to sell that rune essence.
Old school runes. And we should taught me home row.
We should. It. Yeah, man. I mean, I still look at my fingers once in a while, but for the most part, I got more out of RuneScape typing than I ever did out of a class. We should probably cut it here before we turn this into a full episode.
Yeah, into a full episode. Yeah, good idea. Mm-hmm. We're still breaking in the mini, you know? Gotta figure out how it works. But yeah, Thank you. Thank you for listening to this mini. We will have another one in 2 weeks, probably. Next week, we have already recorded, is about some fun server mishaps and one particularly twisted bush outside of a greenhouse. And you just figure out what that means all by yourself.
With devastating economic implications, that bush.
Devastating.
Yeah.
But until then, we will be back. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another Codex entry later. Goodbye. I don't know how important it is to explain the concept of the mini, but it feels like a thing that needs to be done as like a pivot.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. All especially right. Given the like 2 week gap.
Yeah.
That we'll have between the main one and the mini one.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Just like, hey, this is not our job. Turns out.
It turns out. This is the thing we do for fun.
Yeah.
And so we sought to make it fun.
Yep. It got tight for a bit there.
Yeah.